This Augusta Golf Show podcast is brought to you by Gerald Jones Audi. Inspire design, where emotion takes shape. 4022 Washington Road in Martinez.
At some point in our lives, we've all done things to fit in. But then we realize the importance of being ourselves. Introducing the distinct Audi Q5, an SUV all its own. Its LED DRLs stand out wherever they shine. And with Audi Quattro all-wheel drive and available Audi Drive Select, it delivers performance that no one can imitate. So be yourself. Visit your Audi dealer to test drive the distinct Audi Q5.
I'm David Jones. Come see the largest selection ever of Audi A3s, Q5s, and Q7s. Audi exceptional luxury performance at Gerald Jones Audi, 4022 Washington Road in Martinez, or visit us on the web at GeraldJonesAudi.com.
Well, John Feinstein has written over 30 books, two of them, A Season on the Brink and A Good Walk Spoiled, were number one on the New York Times bestsellers list. His latest is The Prodigy. It's a novel about a young golf sensation who finds himself contending for a major championship. It's always a pleasure to welcome John Feinstein back to the Augusta Golf Show. Hi, John.
John, good to talk to you as always.
Congratulations on the book.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun.
How long has this idea been bouncing around in that head of yours?
You know, I've wanted to do a fictional golf book ever since I started writing young adult mysteries a dozen years ago. I had an editor, a great editor at Knopf, whose only weakness I could find was that she didn't like golf. And so every time we would decide on our next project, I'd say golf. She'd say, yeah, tennis sounds great. I'd say golf. She'd say, yeah, football sounds great. And she retired. I moved on to a new editor at Macmillan who was a golfer. And when I said, how about golf? He said, how about golf? So this idea had sort of been rattling around in my head for a long time, and I finally got to execute it now.
I have to admit to you, John, it was after reading the book and then reading some of the reviews, and they talked about it being one of your books for a young adult. I didn't know that as I was reading it.
Well, it started out as a young adult book. That was the initial premise. But as my editor was reading it, he said, this doesn't have to be a book just for kids. Now, there's no sex, drugs, and rock and roll in the book. So, you know, parents don't have to worry about their teenagers or middle school kids reading it. But it is written for an adult audience, too. I have a lot of friends like you who have read the book and really enjoyed it. I think if you like golf, if you know Augusta, if you know the Masters, or even if you've never been to the Masters, I think you can get a kick out of the book. And I like, as you know, most of the characters are real, mm-hmm. whether they're fictionalized or in many cases not fictionalized. And even though you can say it's a stretch for a 17-year-old to contend at the Masters, it's not that big a stretch. I mean, Tiger Woods was 21 when he won by 12.
It's becoming
Sergio
less.
Garcia finished tight 33 when he was 18. Teenagers have played in the Masters in the past. Ken Venturi had the lead at 20 back in, I think it was 1956. So it's not that much of a stretch. And I do think, and I hope you agree, that the surprise ending is pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It is. Do you like writing novels?
I do. I enjoy it. And it's a great break for me from the kind of grind of nonfiction. Nonfiction, I love doing it, but there's still a lot of reporting involved, a lot of travel involved, a lot of logistics involved before I finally settle down to write. But when I'm writing fiction, all the books that I've done, there are 12 of them now altogether, are pretty much based on the reporting I've already done in my career, experiences I've already had in my career, as in I've been to 27 Masters. So I don't have to try to get a credential to the Masters to see what the clubhouse looks like or walk around the golf course. I've done that a million times. I've been very lucky that way. And that's been true in all of my fiction. I am someone as a reader who, if I read something about a subject that I know something about, I like to sit there and say, yeah, that could happen. Mm-hmm. That is what Fenway Park looks like. That is what the Super Bowl looks and feels like, the Final Four, the Masters. And that's as a reader. So as a writer, I try to do that same sort of thing. I like to think of these books as being faction, because a lot of what's in them is real. A lot of the characters, as you know, are real. And even though the storyline itself is made up, I like the reader as they're reading it to think, yeah, that could happen. That's not completely crazy. It's not like, you know, zombies showing up at Augusta or aliens landing on the 18th green or something like that.
We're talking with John Feinstein here on the Augusta Golf Show. Talk about reading. Do you read more fiction or nonfiction?
I like with my writing, interestingly enough, and there's not any pattern to it, I go back and forth. It really depends on what new books are out that I want to read. It may depend on my mood. I drive a lot.
Yep.
And so I listen to a lot of books in the car. And so my mood, depending on my mood or depending on the length of the trip, I might pick a longer book that's fiction or that's nonfiction for that trip. But there's no pattern to it. But as somebody who's written both, I feel like I'm learning something when I read good writers, regardless of whether it's fiction or nonfiction.
You mentioned a lot of things coming from your professional experiences. I don't want to give away too much of the story, but there are heroes in the story and there are villains. I'm gathering you're not a huge fan of managers and agents.
Yes, and most of the managers and agents who I'm friendly with, I wouldn't say friends, but friendly with, would tell you, oh, yeah, John's not a big fan of managers and agents. In fact, I ran into Donald Dell. Do you know Donald Dell?
Yes, yes.
He was a big tennis and basketball agent for many years. He's retired now, and he and I had about a million battles over the years, and he asked me what my latest project was, and I told him, and I said, Donald, you'll be shocked to learn that one of the bad guys is an agent. And he said, let me guess, one of the heroes is a reporter. And I said, you got it. I like to be consistent that way. There's always, in my fiction, there's always a heroic reporter, and there's always at least one bad guy agent.
The intrepid, heroic reporter.
Of course.
Of course.
And it's funny because the first fiction I wrote back in the early 1990s, of course, had a heroic reporter. And I think there was a clue that my first marriage wasn't going to end well because when my ex-wife read it, her suggestion was that I kill off the hero, who was my alter ego. I didn't think that boded too well.
No, probably not. Probably not. Again, the book is called The Prodigy, and it's available wherever you get your books. I will talk more about it here in a second. But before I let you go, I just have to ask a couple of questions off the book. Your last book, The First Major, Behind the Scenes, 2016 Ryder Cup. How much do you want to know what took place a couple of weeks ago at the 2018 Ryder Cup?
Well, it's funny because a lot of people who read the first major have said to me, oh, you should do an epilogue on this Ryder Cup, or you should do a sequel on this Ryder Cup. Here's the problem. I don't think anybody in the U.S. would buy the book. It reminds me, years ago I did a book on Tom Glavine and Mike Messina, two great baseball pitchers, and I sent the book. It was the last year Glavine pitched for the Mets, and on the last day of the season, with the pennant at stake, Glavine pitched and gave up 7 runs in 1/3 of an inning, and needless to say, the Mets lost. And he went back to the Braves the following season. And I had sent a copy of the book to Gary Cohen, who's done Mets play-by-play forever and who's a good friend. And Gary wrote me a very sweet email about how he thought it was my best book and how much he enjoyed it. And I wrote back and I said, so I'm really glad you liked it, Gary. You think I could come on when the season starts for an inning, perhaps, to talk about the book? And Gary wrote me back and he said, John, I love you and I love the book. There's not a Mets fan alive whoever wants to hear the name Tom Glavine again. And I couldn't argue with that. He was right. And I think most Americans probably feel that way about this Ryder Cup. Now, they might want to know what really happened with Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka. I think we all know now that, you know, an argument broke out that the girlfriends / fiancés were involved and that the people stepped in before any punches were thrown. I'm not sure anybody wants to hear much more from Phil Mickelson at this point, because it's never Phil's fault when he plays badly in the Ryder Cup. It's either the captain's fault or it's the golf course's fault or, it's the guy who kidnapped the Lindbergh baby's fault. But it was certainly two lessons. One, that the so-called Ryder Cup task force did not solve the Ryder Cup riddle for the United States. The setup at Hazeltine and a weak European team in 2016 solved it for one Ryder Cup. And number two, when the task force or the Ryder Cup committee, whatever they call it now, next gets together, top of their agenda should be how to deal with defeat. Because, you know, the Europeans, when they lose, which they don't very often, they're always gracious. They give credit to the Americans. They go to the American team room and they toast the Americans no matter what. The Americans start whining about 30 seconds after the trophy's presented. And speaking as an American, I'm a little bit embarrassed.
Before you go, the game of golf and all of sports, really, lost a great journalist last week when Dave Anderson passed away. And there may be some people who are not familiar with Dave's work. One of the great regrets in my life is never meeting Dave Anderson. Tell me a great Dave Anderson story.
Well, I wrote a piece on Dave in the Washington Post, and I was fortunate to know Dave very well, especially as a young reporter, because I learned a lot from him. And the story I love to tell is the 1985 World Series, Game 1, a guy named Cesar Cedeno gets the winning hit for the St. Louis Cardinals against the Kansas City Royals, and Cedeno had been traded to the Cardinals on August 29th, just before the trade deadline. And standing at his locker, he told several of us the story about how Jim Cott, who was the Reds pitching coach, had suggested this to Whitey Herzog, who was the Cardinals manager, over breakfast that the Cardinals trade to get Cedeno because their first baseman, Jack Clark, had just gotten hurt. And that had led to the trade. And here's Cedeno, hit 434 in September, and now he gets the winning hit in Game 1 of the World Series. Well, I followed Dave into Whitey Herzog's office, knowing that Dave knew Whitey from having been in New York and also because Dave knew everybody. And it's midnight, and we're on deadline, and Dave says, Whitey, could you tell us the story about the breakfast with Jim Cott that led to the Cedeno trade? And Herzog was a very hot and cold guy. Didn't matter whether they won or lost, he was apt to be in a bad mood. And he starts screaming at Dave, why the blank would I want to do that? What do I have to do, write your story for you? And I you know me, John, I would not have reacted very well to that, especially if I was someone who had already won a Pulitzer Prize, which Dave had at that point. But Dave just looked at him and said, you know what, Whitey, I would love it if you could write my story for me. But unfortunately, you can't. I have to do it myself. And I'm not as good at what I do as you are at what you do. So would you please tell me the story? And Whitey looked at him and said, why can't I ever say no to you? And then he told the story.
That's a great story.
And that was Dave. Dave could disarm anybody. And Dave got people to tell him things that they probably wouldn't tell other people. And I'll finish with this. I know I'm long-winded, but several years there's an award that the Metropolitan Golf Writers Association gives out annually to someone who has been a distinguished golf writer for many years. And of course, Dave won the award years ago. And several years ago, Bruce Beck, who was the president of the Metropolitan Golf Writers, went to Dave and said, a lot of the guys who have won this award along with you feel that it should be named for you. It should be called the Dave Anderson Award. And we would really like to do that. It would give gravitas to the award. And Dave said, look, I'm very flattered. I appreciate it. But you know what? I've already gotten enough awards and adulation in my career. I would rather you not do that. And, you know, of course, Bruce didn't. And that says so much about Dave. And honestly, I hope, since he's not here to stop us, that we name the award for him next year.
I hope so, too. I hope so, too. Although he wouldn't want that. I hope so, too.
Right. But he should. It reminds me of what Red Auerbach said to his daughter, Nancy, because Red did not want a big deal made at his funeral. And he said, no, I don't want to wake, none of that, just, you know, bury me. And Nancy said, your friends are going to want to get together, they're going to want to tell stories about you, come on. And Red looked at her and said, yeah, you know what, I won't be there, so go ahead and do it.
He is John Feinstein. The name of his book is The Prodigy. and it's available wherever you get your books. And as we alluded to at the beginning of the conversation, make a great Christmas gift. The holidays are not that far away. John?
Absolutely. Or a Halloween gift.
Or what a Halloween heck? Gift.
Put it in a pumpkin and give it to your favorite golf fan.
John, I always appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this. Congratulations on the book.
Thanks, John. Always good to talk to you. Appreciate it.